ecological crisis or our way of connecting to land, people, and community, or our disconnect, our environmental crisis has an awful lot to do with our own spiritual health. And sure, we can be from a whole variety of perspectives, traditions, etc., but ultimately, what we see in our culture around us is in many ways a reflection of us. It's humans who have created this culture. And so as we change, even if just, you know, whatever, the 20, the 30, the whoever is connected between here and Vancouver, if we change, we are starting to change the culture itself. So it's not out there, although I love blaming our politicians, that's or our industry, because the politicians often serve the industry, whatever. That's comfortable, right? So somebody out there is to blame, and we can cast a lot of anger and aspersions at them out there. And then we don't do the work. This is our world, right? We're living in it. And sure, on the other hand, you can say, yes, we come by it honestly. So Wendell Berry likes to say, living in this hydrocarbon culture, which is the major cause of our climate change, and most of you know we're at already over 400 parts per million, 350 parts per million is the highest limit that most scientists have discovered, would be allowing a somewhat stable environment. We're already beyond that, right? So the issue then is, rather than just externalizing it, back to Wendell Berry. Wendell Berry says, well, it's original sin too. In other words, we all grew up in a hydrocarbon culture. Most of us probably use some version of hydrocarbons to get here. We're using hydrocarbons to light this place, etc., right? So it's the culture we have grown up in. At the same time, that should not lead us to say, therefore, it's fate. There's nothing we can do about it. Our hydrocarbon culture only started early in the 18th century. Right? Was it 1712 or whatever? Whenever the steam engine got invented and initially used for distilling whiskey. So, I mean, at least it had some good uses a while back. But anyhow, and when people discovered with the steam engine, you could replace, say, 500 horses or however many, or if you just think of 1 gallon of gas, the amount of work you can do with 1 gallon of gas, that it would have taken human power, and we are, after all, solar powered, and animals are solar powered, it would have taken us an awful lot of time and an awful lot of work to, whatever, to plow the fields, to do whatever, right? And so, but at the same time, it is the hydrocarbon culture that we're living in that is the biggest threat to our land, water, and air. Right, and so that's why Wendell Berry says, okay, we didn't choose it. That's why he uses, the Roman Catholic language of original sin. Whatever you want to say. But, okay, it's a structure that we have grown up in without us having consciously chosen it. But it is a structure that in itself is also destructive of land, people, and community. And, whether it's the plastic oceans or islands that we're building, which is another hydrocarbon offspin, right? Everything in plastic. And I'm glad there's schools that are reversing that, right? So, okay, you can't use plastic. You have to bring your own. You have to bring healthy food rather than junk food, etc. And schools are wrestling with that in British Columbia. In Alberta, not so much. The word, food security or food sovereignty is hardly known. Anyhow, we do have Food Secure Alberta. There's a little NGO. But, partly government funded, but it has no power in shaping policies as yet. It hasn't shaped school policies, nothing to do with school lunches or what's available, etc., etc. So, which brings us to the key point then again, we grew up in a certain culture, a hydrocarbon culture. Alberta and now our federal government are totally dependent, they are totally addicted to this source of energy, right, as supposedly the economic locomotive or driver of our economy. And therefore, Bill C-45 could eliminate hundreds of environmental laws that took decades to develop, right? People have wrestled and thought hard, et cetera, to develop those policies. And then you can say for budget implementation, we can just wipe all of those out. That should give you a warning sign in itself. But anyhow, so So that this is the kind of pattern we're in. The question then for us is, what holds us captive and what keeps us apathetic or despairing in that context? So on the beginning, none of us chose it. It is the world we have grown up in and have been raised in a certain way, right? So from, as Gisela was saying, who's now dancing up a storm, which is a healthy activity, I'm sure. When you steal, fold the plastic paper and you made sure that it lasted for a whole week or whatever, right? And so we're living in a throwaway culture. But that throwaway culture isn't you individually chose to be part of a throwaway culture. It is designed in such a way, right? I mean, where do you buy, go to any store, the endless amount of stuff that is in throwaway containers. Germany, of course, and many other places, but we did about it in Germany, has turned some of that around. In other words, they cannot give you all this packaging that they can still give you in the store in Canada. As a matter of fact, if they overpackage, you can give the packaging in the store and they're responsible for taking it. So it is possible, like human society has created this mess. Humans can actually make policy decisions and they can make it individual lifestyle decisions. It's not easy, right? Especially in Alberta, right? I mean, we don't even have a greyhound running out of cameras. You have to be driven how many? Maybe 50 kilometers before you could find a greyhound stop to make it by greyhound from Vancouver to Camrose, right? So somebody has to still drive 50 kilometers. That's how good our greyhound service is. So the structures have been created in such a way that it's very hard in certain parts of the country. Victoria and Vancouver maybe are luckier. You can do way more by bike, walking, etc., etc. And that should be something that catches in a larger, in a broader area. How do we do those kind of shifts? So what I want us to examine a bit, and maybe just think for a few minutes, what keeps us captive in the system, which we know is destructive? And we will always post on spiritoftheland.ca, that's the webpage. And you can always get readings and activities for each of the weeks. So there's stuff that you can do between now and 2 weeks from now when we gather in the Proto group. But we also will give you all sorts of readings. And one of the suggested readings, and there's a few people who are doing this for credit, is Bill McKibben. And he says, well, there's three big consequences of living in this particular culture. First of all, I like his introduction, he says, up to a certain point, more is better. And a lot of us here are immigrants or, whatever, or have grown up poor, whatever. And at a certain level, a bit more is better. Right? We used to have two suitcases and a table and a door over those two suitcases. That was our first table when we came to Canada in 1951. And so, being able to get a bit of wood and making a real table out of it, one of those, a couple of crossbars and some slits, that was better, right? But we have gotten into a culture where the assumption is that more continues to be better. And in fact, it has created three very significant problems. And so there's an increasing disparity between the fewer and fewer who have an amazing amount of overabundance of resources and more people who are basically dropping off the map. So whenever a DA talks about, we're going to tackle world poverty, that's all window dressing. There's nothing in their structures or in their design that's going to deal. It's going to be a way of selling that certain corporations can then go and benefit in India or benefit in China from doing whatever is also unhealthy here. So the disparity within Canada has increased, the disparity globally has increased. That's the first thing. That's the justice issue, right? The growing inequality. The second thing he argues, he doesn't have to argue it, with that disparity, actually social disintegration happens. An interesting read, which we haven't listed, we should probably list, is called Spirit Level. I have caught that on the radio, and then I tried to track it down. Spirit Level was studied in Britain, and they were wondering why all these riots were happening, whether it was a couple of summers ago or whatever. And it is when the economic disparity within a country grows further and further apart, you'll have more social disconnect and more social unrest. Right? So there's a certain level, there'll always be some inequality, but there's a certain level beyond which it actually becomes destructive to the social fabric. So So social disintegration or the disconnection from our communities is another area when, because once you have more and more, like Pat and I lived in Mexico quite a bit for 14 years on and off because we ran an exchange program for the University of Alberta. And there, at one time, the university, the only housing we had was in the gated community. Well, that's actually a symbol of social disintegration. Whereas in other parts, you know, of Cuernavaca, which is south of Mexico City, you know, rich and poor can live really cheek by jowl, and they're still part of the community. But after a while, you know, we have to enclose ourselves and keep ourselves away. So this inequality leads also to social disintegration and leads to breakdown of community. So it's this connection to real people. In Calgary, there's, and probably Edmonton is the same thing, there are suburbs built in such a way that there are no sidewalks. Right, you drive your car into you click, you know, the garage door opens, you drive in, the thing closes, and then you go to your entertainment centers after you have exhausted yourself at work. And then the next morning you drive out. Whereas at least in Cambridge, some areas don't have sidewalks, but that's for oversight of our city planning department. But it's the idea is, in summer at least, which is short, right? People actually talk to each other because you actually walk down and say hi and whatever. One of our former MPs says, "Oh, I hate inviting people over because I always have to, plan ahead and then get organized. But I love it. He had a beautiful porch, sort of wraparound porch in his house. I love it when people just stop by and chat, right? But that creates this kind of neighborliness. And I think when we get more and more, those who have the more are going to get more and more insecure. And therefore need more video cameras to monitor, what they have, and therefore everybody else becomes a potential threat. And that happens also globally, right, between, poor countries, poor people within countries, et cetera, et cetera. The second major issue with confusing more with better is basically the environment just can't keep it anymore. Right, you can only have so much carbon in the air, aside from the acidification of the oceans, right? So the acidification is at such a high level, and again, our oceans can't handle that, etc. So our environment simply cannot bear this confusion of more with better, right? So whether you want to call it the throwaway society, the consumer society, etc., etc. And the third point he raises, Bill McKibben, this is in Deep Economy, is if happiness hasn't actually increased. After a certain level, and somebody's gotten it, like if you get much beyond $10,000, obviously our housing prices are insane here in these, Vancouver and Victoria, so probably $10,000 will hardly get the rent. But anyhow, in other contexts where that isn't the case, at least in the US we've been doing studies, and after about $10,000 or whatever, like once your basic, your level of happiness hasn't gone up. So the highest level of happiness in North America was in 1956. But our consumption has increased fivefold since that time. And we probably need 4 or 5 planets pretty soon. And it isn't that we are doing it because we're getting happier and happier. Right? And of course, we don't have a gross happiness index the way Bhutan does or something. Or we use our gross domestic product to measure how well off our country is. Anyhow, so we're caught in that kind of a system, and it has those three big consequences. But the way I want us to look at it, and maybe I'll just talk actually for a bit and then you can reflect on it, what holds us actually captive? And maybe take a couple of minutes. Think of all the parts, areas of your life where you are somehow dependent on some version of global corporations. What in your life are you dependent on? And maybe share that with a neighbor or something. But just think for a bit. Where all are we dependent? Because in many ways, global corporations are using governments as their servants. Look at the gridlock in the United States, but Canada isn't much better. Right? So the people of British Columbia, the people of Alberta, although I don't know what the people of Alberta were quite a mixed group, but it's really, we're way more diverse in Alberta than the media give us credit. As a matter of fact, there's a majority who don't actually agree with what the government is doing, but with our first past the post voting system, that alternative voice hardly gets heard. You hardly know that there's probably, not maybe quite as much as in British Columbia, but there's a lot of diversity in political community. But the point is that our government, we have sort of a friend who is in a sort of a secret or private or non-formal shadow cabinets, that's the wrong word as well, with our premier. And he was saying she was surprised, not the kitchen cabinet, people just chat, right? She was surprised how powerful the oil and gas lobby and old boys network really was. Because for 2 or 3 weeks she was saying, hey, that's interesting. She's actually going to examine our tax structure. You know, she's actually willing to have other revenue rather than oil and gas be the revenue for our government and lottery for us. And all of a sudden that was quickly off the table. And so publicly she's just a spokesperson now for that interest. Whereas initially she actually had some ideas that people thought this would be interesting, right? So it's amazing how powerful these interests are. And then I get very bored listening to not all politicians, I mean, you know, when you get them off record and have them, you know, no cameras, nobody's going to report it in the media, you can have good conversations, and there are very honest people who are trying, you know, their best to serve their province, their country, their city in political realms. But when people go on to their talking points, and it takes about half a minute, and you realize, okay, these are just talking points. I grew up in Nazi Germany. We call that propaganda. Right? And our endless media barrage is basically propaganda. Our advanced technological society cannot carry on without propaganda. It's totally dependent on convincing us that life somehow is better if we have more of this or of that or something different or whatever. So anyhow, so just think about what are all the areas in your life, and you can go beyond being dependent on corporations, that what are we dependent on or what holds you captive that we can't easily break out of the system. Right? The system of more is better, the system which is so dependent on hydrocarbons as it is right now. You know, all gas, coal, whatever. Just think about it for a few minutes and maybe share with a neighbor or something, and then I'll carry on holding forth a bit.
Think and share.